This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join. Shop your favorite brands and save. Sephora, Boots, Argus, Temu, Adidas, Trip.com. The list is long. Save online at over 550 stores. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose bank transfer or PayPal. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, get a new outfit. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to rakuten.co.uk or get the app. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N.
All right, what is going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Southeastern Bowhunter Podcast. I'm going to run through this kind of quick, but we have a legend in the hunting industry on the podcast today. We got Mr. Dan Infault coming on here to tell us all about, I'm going to ask him a lot about Wisconsin, Wisconsin hunting. That is the thing. So I've got this new mic here. I'm still trying to figure it out. That's something that I'll be doing later this year, so I figure who better to get on here and talk about it. So before we do that, we're going to run through the partners. Podcast brought to you by Sportsman's Empire. If you haven't checked out that podcast network yet, please go do that and go see all the other shows that they have. I am, what is it, like maybe a month and a half in, and it's been great. It really has been great. We've seen a lot of growth and very thankful to be part of that podcast network. So please go support them. Let's see. Next up, Osseo Gear. That's the camo brand that I use. They have a new turkey vest that just came out. So all you turkey nuts, that's for you. Jay Maxwell was a part of making that, so I know that it's going to be a high quality product. And who knows, maybe I'll be using one this year. Next up is the boutique. I got my new arrow wraps that have Jesus on them. They're actually really sick. I'll be doing a video with it, probably next month. And you know, the boutique wraps are absolutely the best on the market. Best quality, easiest to put on. They stay on. There's no issues with them. So please, if you're building new arrows, head over to the boutique and get them. Let's see, G5 Outdoors, they got the new Dirty Bird. That's the new decap head for turkeys that they just dropped with collaboration with Chris B. I'll be using those this turkey season. Then obviously I'll be using the Mega Meats as well during deer season. Let's see, next up, Prime Archery, getting the Prime Divide 31 in full Osseo. And I don't know when it's going to get here, but I'm very excited to get it and start shooting it. You know, if you want a new bow this season, Prime's definitely the way to go. Remember, nothing aims like a Prime. Let's see. Next up, Dialed Archery. So I got my proof, got my new proof. You're not gonna be able to see it because of my big head, but it's pretty sick. And once the whole bow build is done and everything gets solidified, I will do a video showcasing it. And you know, it may have a little bit of significance, some other thing, but we'll see. But no, Dialed makes a great product. I'm actually wearing the new Deertona line that they just dropped. So if you want some new shirts and you're a fan of NASCAR like me, head over to Dialed Archery and go get your new stuff. Let's see. Next up, Moultrie cell cams. My cell cams are working great. Just put new batteries in them today. We've got the Edge 3 Pro, the Edge 3, and then also the Edge Solar. So head over to Moultrie.com and check out all the stuff they have to offer. You're going to need them this summer, so why not go with Moultrie? Let's see. Next up, Bow Hunting League. I'll keep that one kind of short because there's really not much going on, you know, with deer season being over. But if you want to be a state sponsor like me and have a ton of perks with it, head over to bowhuntingleague.com. Go get signed up. Tell them we sent you, especially if you're in Georgia. Tell them that you heard about it from us. All right, it helps us out. It helps them out too. Let's see. Next up, Boning Archery. Running the alphas this year again. Scrape Doctor, always using that scrape magic. Victory Archery, I'm running the HLR still. Catalyst Archery, I've got my, I'll actually say this. You know, Catalyst, they've got the, it's a stabilizer company. They've also got this little like side quiver thing that you can use if you're just shooting in the yard. You know, if you're like shooting one arrow going to pull it, you want to be able to shoot two and all that stuff. It's actually pretty sick. Apparently it's selling a lot. But Catalyst is a great company. They've got high quality stabilizers at an affordable price, and that's very important to me. And last but not least, the new partner to the podcast is Unbound Archery. So when Nick came on last week, he and I talked afterwards, and I was like, listen, I love the stuff you've got. I have the, I call it cotton candy, but you, if you're watching the video, you can see I've got the new strings on my wife's bow. And, you know, hey, I've compared those strings with other bow strings, and I see Unbound on a completely different level. I think they make the absolute best strings that are out there, and you can get them in any color. He offers this thing called like Crayola or something, and it's just a mix match of a bunch of colors. It looks pretty sick. So please go support him. Use the code in the description. All the codes for all these partners are in the description below with all the websites too, so you can go directly to it, get what you need, and you know, we try to take care of you here. So before we get into it with Dan, I have to talk to you guys a little bit about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I mean, I had a conversation this morning that completely humbled me. I didn't really realize this up until I was actually, it was pointed out, and it was from a good buddy of mine, that I tend to go really negative about a lot of things, and I don't like that. I'll complain about a lot of stuff, and really, I have nothing to complain about, right? I'm alive, wife, beautiful daughter, this podcast, awesome job, roof over my head, bunch of animals I love. I mean, there's tons of reasons for me to be thankful, and there's times that I'm not. And, you know, we're human. We all fall short, but when it's a constant thing or it gets pretty consistent, I think that's when it becomes. So had some time with the Lord this morning and you know, asked for forgiveness and reconciled everything I needed to. And, you know, I'm happy that it happened. I need people to point out stuff to me. So, you know, I really have to just give all glory to God. Everything that happens with this podcast, everything in my life that I'm so eternally thankful for, it's all because of him. So if you guys if you guys want that too, look, just give Jesus a chance, okay? I really, really think that people that hear his voice and have a relationship with him are so much better off than just anything. Jesus loves you, right? He does. No matter what you've done, he still loves you, and he still wants you to come home to him and have a relationship. That's the most important thing. I know this just because I know this. I don't have time to get into it, but I know that, you know, yes, a lot of places have traditions and traditions are important, but what Jesus really wants is a relationship with us. So, yeah, that's my preacher moment. Hopefully the audio on this is good with the, new, microphone right here. It's kind of weird having it in my face, but I'm sure I'll get used to it. But look, Dan's waiting on us. Let's get into it with Mr. Dan Involt.
Southeastern Bow Hunter Podcast.
All right, guys, we got a legend in the industry, a man that I have listened to for a while and who knows his stuff. All right. I've seen videos you've posted about a potential world record typical, which I'd like to talk about. I know that was probably a few years ago, but man, we got Mr. Dan Involt on the podcast today. Dan, what is going on, dude?
Not a lot, man. How are you doing?
Good, good. Trying out, you know, playing with technology right here. So it's, I'm really hoping this audio comes through okay, because it's been a grind lately, just switching back and forth from different things we've used to record. But dude, so like I said, you are very well established in the industry. Everybody knows who you are, but for the people who maybe live under a rock and don't know who you are, don't know your name or what you've been able to do, why don't you give us a little background on who Dan Involt is?
I'm pushing 60 years old now. I've been killing big bucks mobile style since I was about 9. so I've been doing it for quite a while, and you know, I grew up and lived my whole life in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's unique, where you got, you know, a blend. Like, you got swamps, you got hill country, you got big woods, you got farmland, you got just about everything. So I got a really good mix, learned a lot about hunting. My forte is I've always, you know, tried to hunt them right at their beds, because I just feel like deer are nocturnal, and if you don't get close, you're not getting the mature ones, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that tactic works for you, knowing what I know. Dude, you really know, you want to talk about big bucks, man. You're up there. Whenever somebody asks me, like, who do you think would be
like top three. I always have you, Andre DeQuisto, and then like, I don't know, probably one of the big names like Lee Ellis or something, you know, like it, there's a whole group of guys that just seem to know what these deer are doing. And I have really learned a lot, with how they act, you know, and me being only 7 years into hunting, I listen to guys like you and it helps a lot. So, I mentioned something earlier and I just want to touch on this now. You made a video a while ago talking about a deer you saw that you thought was a potential world record typical. Can you kind of dive into that and explain like what happened with that?
Yeah, that was a deer I saw while I was shining deer, which is legal here. You can shine them in season till 10 o'clock and anytime you want during the summer. So a lot of people will go out and locate deer, find deer on a property so they know where there's a big one to hunt. And I was driving around with my son and he was filming while I was glassing. And we hit a deer and I couldn't see the antlers. And, you know, 90% of the time it's a doe or something really small, you know, and I couldn't see it. And I was like, just getting frustrated. I was just going to keep going. And he said, wait, Dad, it's a buck. I think it's a good one. And it turned out to be just an absolute monster in a very high pressured area. It was a typical 10 with, all the ingredients to be, you know, probably over 200 inches, world class.
I can only think of one. It's even like Jordan buck. I'm sure there's others, but. And what's crazy is Jordan Buck was taken out of Wisconsin, wasn't
it? Yes.
So what is it about Wisconsin? Say like a big buck hub, because you know if you say that, I don't want to do that. Huh? What is it about Wisconsin that you think creates an environment for these deer to grow that big?
I'm having a hard time hearing you. Every time you move your head, your audio goes in and out.
Are you? Hold on. Is that better?
That's a lot better.
Okay. Like I said, it's this new mic, man. I got to play with it. The listeners will probably appreciate that. Right. So, I did the intro with it. It sounded all right. And I just figured we'd try it. But anyway.
Aim the camera back down. Like, you bumped the camera. Now it's like really bright light at the top. Just aim it down a little bit.
Dude, what is going on? All right. Is that better?
That's better. Yep. Yep.
Jeez, man, I try to be professional on these things, and you know, just sometimes devil's like, you know what, man, we're gonna throw some things your way. But anyway, what I was asking was Wisconsin, you guys have I looked at the Boone and Crockett records and it's like so much more than pretty much everybody else. I mean, what is it about Wisconsin that I guess creates an environment like that?
Well, I think we got better genetics and better genetics than just about anywhere. And that's going to sound crazy to a lot of people. But I think that we would way outproduce places like Iowa and stuff if we just had better management. We got poor management, but great genetics.
Yeah.
If it makes sense. I mean, we're way over hunted. We kill way too many deer. So you have a hard time growing them up, but when they get growing up, they get big. I mean, for instance, I've got a 2-year-old buck that's a bona fide 2-year-old. It weighed 150 pounds dressed, scored 140, you know. So we get some pretty big bucks. I mean, a lot of 2-year-olds make Pope and Young here. A lot of Boone and Crockett's are only 3 years old, you know. So genetically, we've got some good bucks. It's not everywhere in the state, though. It's kind of spotty, you know what I mean? I think the southeastern Wisconsin area has really good genetics, especially little pockets around certain counties and stuff. But it's just hard to grow them, especially on public land. When you look at the record books, it's kind of like a wow factor because the numbers of Pope and Youngs and Boone and Crockett's coming out of Wisconsin is much higher than any other state.
Yeah.
So people, when they see that, they're like, what is this, a sleeper? All I hear about is Iowa and stuff, you know. But what it is that the majority of those deer are coming off of private, highly managed private, like Buffalo County. Yep. And, you know.
Okay, so I'm going to throw a scenario at you that is basically just going to be what I'll be dealing with this November. My stepdad has a friend who lives northern Wisconsin. The property's even farther north. It's 30 miles south of Lake Superior. I forget what, I think it's like Washburn County or something like that. And it's 100 acres. Hasn't been hunted in like 15 years. The dude says he sees a ton of deer up there all the time. Mm-hmm. In that area, what would you say would be a reasonable thing for somebody to expect?
You know, it's hard to say. That's a spotty area. That area has some good hunting. Mm-hmm. And some areas that are decimated from wolves.
Okay.
But I've hunted up by Washburn a little bit, and there are some pretty big bucks up there. Okay. If you're on a property that hasn't been hunted, if nobody's been trespassing or anything, it should be pretty good. Is it a farm or is it big woods?
I'm pretty sure it's big woods. From what I've been told, because I haven't been to it yet, but from what I've been told, it's just big woods. The guy's got a cabin out there. Mm-hmm. And like he would go up there and hunt, you know, like I said, 15 years ago or so. And what's funny is he's got trail cameras up there. I keep bugging my dad about it. I'm like, hey, can you call him and just tell him to send you pictures of whatever he's got out there? Because if he's not hunting it anymore, I kind of would like to know what's, you know, what's around, or at least what he's seeing. But, you know, because it's in November and all that, there is no rush on their end. And for me, I'm like, well, I'll just keep bugging them until they send it. So I don't know. I mean, because I'm originally from Illinois, right? Like I live in Georgia now, but I came from Illinois, and seeing, you know, me and my dad used to go to this little game reserve by the house that you could literally watch deer in the field. And you want to talk about giants. I mean, there was nothing to see 150, 160 inch deer just, you know, playing around in the field. And we would watch them fight. I mean, we had a buck fight 10 yards behind us in the thicket on the other side of the road. And you could see them standing up and you could hear them clash. And you could see them stand up again and like they kind of pawed each other. It was the weirdest thing, dude. But so I know like up that way, obviously, you know, the Midwest and stuff, it's definitely got bigger deer than down here. What would you say, like, so you've hunted Georgia before, right?
Not Georgia, no.
No? I thought you came out here to Fort Gordon and hunted.
Not. Mm-mm.
Huh. Nope. That might have just been a rumor that somebody told me then.
I did hunt in Fort and didn't say which fort I was at. Somebody might have just thought that's where I was at.
That's probably it. Yeah. Well, have you hunted anywhere kind of in the Southeast?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what would you say the comparison is from the Southeastern, I guess, terrain to what you're used to up there in Wisconsin?
The one thing that amazed me the most was that the deer were so freaking tiny.
They are pretty small.
Yeah. I shot a mature buck in the Southeast this year on the public land challenge with the hunting public guys.
Yeah.
And when I got up to the deer, it was just amazing how small it was. I think it was 110 pounds dressed. For comparison, my biggest deer up here, weight-wise, dressed, bottomed out a 300-pound scale. We never got a total weight on it.
Oh, my God.
We get some pretty big bucks up here. But they got to get to maturity to get that big, you know?
Yeah.
But so it's a big difference. But as far as the deer go, I didn't see no difference. I mean, deer, wherever you go, they bed the same, they feed the same, they move the same, you know, it's just a matter of what you get for pressure, you know, and what you have for terrain, you know. But when I went down there, my first time in the Southeast was this year. So when went down there, first thing I hit was swamps, and they were so freaking nasty. I was in waist deep crap constantly, and I wasn't really getting on deer. And I think I could have got onto something if I kept on it. I was hunting with a partner, and we just collectively hashed it out, decided to try the, like pine woods, you know, that area just had a lot of pines, you know, so, that for me is easier to read than the swamps. Swamps are hard, you know, and that's what I hunt the most, but I'll admit that they're hard. So we went to the pine woods, which I thought would be a lot easier. So I looked for you know, thick edge versus open areas. So you had an edge, you know, and I looked at the Onyx Oak app. I looked for creeks, and I found an area that was really thick and had a creek coming through. And when I put the Onyx Oak app on, I saw that all the creeks had oaks along them. And it's like all the logging operations didn't cut the oaks along the creeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, I went in there, acorns were dropping, and you could see where the deer would be bedding, where that creek went into the thick stuff. And there wasn't a whole lot of sign, but I sat up there and ended up hunting the same spot for 5 days because I was seeing like, this totally public, because I was seeing like two or three good bucks a day, you know. And ended up on the last day, I shot a really nice buck coming in the morning, but I was seeing as many as 25, 30 deer a day. And I was the only one seeing that many deer. Yeah. It was amazing, but they're bedded just like I thought they'd be, just based on the terrain. And I did, because it drives me nuts to hunt the same spot twice, more or less 5 days. But you can't leave if you got that kind of action, you know. But I did midday go do some scouting and stuff, and I went and looked for other spots with the same kind of scenario, and pretty much found the same kind of sign, but just never hunted it because of what I was onto. My point is, just based on what I know here, I went down there and got right on deer. Deer are deer wherever you go. Everybody kind of makes it out that deer are tougher here, or tougher there, or easy here, you know, and it really has to do with how many deer there are and how much pressure there is.
Yeah, I mean, that it's funny you say that, because I was thinking that when I asked the question, like, how different it was down here compared to up there. Because, you know, I have this joke that I've been saying since this past deer season that I'm convinced the deer in my area are psychic. They know when I'm coming before I ever even think about going. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I know that's not the case, right? But I have 3 years of history now that at all the spots that I've hunted, which I don't hunt them that much. I really, really don't. And they will they'll stop daylighting consistently, probably around like mid-December. And then as soon as season's over, the next day, they're all out there just frolicking around. I mean, I've got bucks showing back up, and I'm like, dude, what did I do? And it's got, in my opinion, it's just got to be deer density. Plus, you hit it right on the head when you were talking about oak bottoms with, you know, crossing the creeks and everything with all the oak trees. Because I talked to my taxidermist when I killed a buck last year and brought it up to him, because we weren't seeing any movement. You know, and it was warm down here and there was a ton of acorn crop. And I'm like, dude, where are these deer at? Like, where? Because he's very well versed with the area. And he was like, they're in the oak bottoms. He's like, they're going to go in a spot where there's plenty of food. They don't need to run around to rut because all the deer are going to the food. And he's like, the problem is a lot of those places you can't get into because they'll set up on the perfect wind and it thermals and all that other stuff draws everything into them. They'll know you're coming before you're even anywhere near them. So it's funny to hear you say that all that worked, because I mean, it's exactly what I was being told during season. But yeah, it makes me feel better for sure going up to Wisconsin and knowing what I know here. And I mean, what, so like the area I'm talking about, is that like really thick, like mixture of different types of trees and stuff, or is it mostly oaks, is mostly pines? I mean, what would you say?
There's a lot of pine up there. There should be some oak up there. You should have a variety of tree types, you know. It's not as good as where I'm at.
Okay.
The southern end of the state is way better. But Washburn County ain't bad. You know, you got a lot of bears up there and you got a lot of wolves up there.
Why are you gonna tell me that?
So they won't bother you, but they do eat a lot of deer.
Yeah. You know?
Bears actually a lot more deer than people think. They eat the fawns quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
So the deer density probably isn't as high as what it is where I live. Mm-hmm. But the deer up there grow pretty big. There's some pretty big deer that come from up there. I personally know a guy that hunted in the Bayfield Swamp, which is right down the street from where you're going.
Yeah,
shot 200-inch bucks. Now that was in the '90s, but he shot them on back-to-back years in the same swamp.
Dude, that was 30 years ago, but that gives me some hope. I mean, I had a guy reach out to me from that area, and he listened to, I guess, one of the episodes I was talking about it. And he was like, hey, so you're coming up my way, right? And I'm like, yeah, what should I expect? And he sent me some deer from the past like 5 years. All of them are bigger than anything I've shot and bigger than almost everything I had on camera this year. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go. I mean, I'm not going to have time to go up and scout. So it's going to be show up, go find the sign, figure out where they're at. So basically do it old school, which I typically only do on public. And it's, I mean, I haven't killed anything on public yet, but I have come across some pretty decent deer over there. So I don't know. I mean, you say bears, man. All I can think about now is walking in the morning and just having this giant bear just in front of me.
Yeah, that's bears wild. I mean, they're black bears. It's not like they're dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about those wolves, though? I mean, that's something that I've heard a lot about is the wolves up there are just gnarly. Like they really do a lot of damage on the population. Is there any sort of plan to sort of mitigate that, or are they just kind of letting it run wild?
You know, the state's like probably slightly more liberal than it is conservative. And the liberal agenda is to, you know, give all the wolves a hug. So nobody's hunting them here. And they're getting a little out of control. Really? They move through an area and then they move to another area. And if that guy's getting pictures of deer, they're probably not right in his area.
Okay.
You might have a few, but you never see them. You'll see the tracks, but you won't see the wolves.
You ever hear them?
Oh, yeah. You'll hear them at night. Yeah.
Dude, what's that like? Because I've heard coyotes here, but I've heard a wolf howl one time at a zoo, and it was gnarly. But I also was
actually kind of cool. It's kind of cool to listen to, you know.
Dude, I'm excited, man. I'm so excited. So, like, typically weather-wise, what would you say first week of November is like up there? Should I expect a lot of snow and be frozen solid, or is it kind of hit or miss?
Snow is hit or miss at that time of the year. Should be pretty cold for you, though. I mean, it can be as cold as like 15 or 20, and it could be as warm as 50, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of that time frame where you really don't know exactly what you get to do, but is what it is.
Dude. Okay. Well, I'll pack everything that I need then.
That you're going to have to look for when you go up there is that the deer you're used to seeing, these deer are way bigger bodied. Mm-hmm. So you might be fooled into thinking the racks are smaller than they are. Kind of the same way when we go down the southeast, the racks look way bigger than they are.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why I like them so much.
The deer I shot was probably like 120 inches and it was a mature buck. You know, from my standpoint, looking at that deer, I would say it was 150.
What? It's different.
Yeah. 110-pound deer versus, you know, a deer that's 180, 190 pounds, you know.
Dude, that's going to be... So, okay, what is, like, what's the regulations for, like, out-of-staters? Like, say I come up from Georgia, I kill a buck. What would I need to do to legally bring everything back to Georgia?
I don't know what it is about removing it from Wisconsin. It's probably other states you have to worry about that you travel through. Okay. There's a lot of states have rules about, you have to, not take any spinal cord back or any brains back, you know, so you have to cap the skull or, you know, so you might have to, if you want to get it mounted, you might have a taxidermist skin it for you.
Okay.
That kind of thing. And that's because of the CWD, and it's a gay rule because the CWD is throughout this whole country now. It just is. Every place they check for it, they find it. So it's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, you can't bring Wisconsin CWD to Georgia's CWD. You know, it's just stupid.
It's, you know? Yeah. I mean, we had our first case last year, and I did a podcast on it talking about, like, because, you know, we can bait in Georgia. And that's like a culture down here. I mean, it's to the point now that if you're not putting food out, you won't see anything. It's really that bad. And I saw that they posted, they found their first case. And I jokingly was like, well, guess we're going back to no baiting. Cause you know, that seems to be the fix for everything. Yet all these other states that have it, they still have CWD. So I don't know if that's going to, I mean, what I do want to ask you, like, what is your opinion on all that? Do you think that there's anything we can do? Do you think that it's as bad as they say? Or because I don't really take it that serious, but I also, I've had one episode where I talked about it, so I don't really know a bunch about it.
I'll tell you, I got really involved with it when it came to Wisconsin because Wisconsin is the state that really blew it up and tried
Okay.
and made all these other states get paranoid about it. Because CWD was out west since the 60s, older than longer than been alive. And nobody ever cared, until it came to Wisconsin. Then all of a sudden they cared. But there was a place in Wisconsin, in Madison, where they do research, where it's documented they had brought deer in from Colorado that had CWD, and they're studying it in their labs at a university, and a mule deer that had CWD escaped. And then
Oh,
escape
wow.
is where the hub of our CWD is. And they've tried to sweep all that under the rug, but it's gotten out from
Yeah.
researchers and stuff. But anywho, they at the time we got CWD, the governor we had was pushing really hard to lower the deer numbers. And in Wisconsin, the hunters have to agree with it. So by saying it's a disease, he was able to override the hunters' votes and stuff, right? So his fix was to kill every single deer. And I don't mean just like lower the population, kill every single deer. This was the plan in the southern half of Wisconsin. And it was kill the deer to save the deer. And it was just the most ridiculous thing in the world because the studies were showing that CWD is a prion. It's not something living.
Yeah.
So it leaches into the soil. And you bring deer back in, they just get CWD again. And at the same time, 24% of the herd has a natural immunity to it. So you're going to kill those too?
Yeah.
So
Because you
it's
don't
all
know.
right. The whole thing's ridiculous. So, anyways, people fought back so hard, they stopped the kill them all thing. But before they stopped it, they killed a lot. They gave unlimited tags. They started with people shooting them like out of helicopters, sharpshooters over bait and stuff. And
What?
then they stopped that because of public outcry.
Yeah.
But there's pictures going around of these giant mountains of dead deer. And then they're trying to tell us, so if you don't do this, these deer will kill people. That you'll get this, like that. I can't think of the name of the disease.
Mad cow disease thing.
Yeah, something. Yeah, something like that. And
Yeah.
they're like, it'll morph into that. It could, and it could potentially kill massive amounts of people, which is not true.
Yeah, there's no scientific basis for that at all.
There's so many deer that have CWD, and the way butcher shops work, everybody's eating some CWD in Wisconsin to
Yeah.
beat everybody, whether they want to admit it or not. I mean, I don't even test my deer. I just eat them.
Yeah.
I don't care. So, anywho, the deer grow to an old age and die. And some of them die of CWD. I mean, there's a lot of people who make it out to be a joke. Like, I hunt in a CWD area. I've never seen a dead deer and blah, blah, blah. And I get what they see, but I have been to properties that have it really bad, like in the hub. And you'll find dead deer laying around from CWD, but there's still a good population. I mean, where it came here and it got just out of hand, you can
Yeah.
still go there, hunt deer, and still see lots of deer. But like my area didn't even have CWD, and they decided to kill all the deer here because it was adjoining a county that had found one deer that had CWD. So any county adjoining one. So they gave you had to shoot a doe to get a buck, but unlimited tags free.
Dude.
Every doe you shot, you walked around a handful of doe tags. Every doe you shot, they gave you a sticker that was good for like a couple of years to shoot a buck. So you could we had a neighbor who shot 34 does and got 34 buck tags, and killed 34 bucks. And as you can imagine, in a couple of years, it was hard to find a deer. So now
Yeah.
we're kind of rebound, and they're still killing a lot of deer with doe tags and stuff. But they calm down. It's back to one buck with the bow, one buck with the gun. But we've just got like mismanagement with all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. So that is one thing I wanted to ask you is like, what is the tag system now? Cause I read somewhere that, like you said, earn a buck, but then somebody else told me that it's not that's that
gone.
Anymore. I mean,
that's gone. Yeah.
Okay. You don't so when I get my out of state, just get what the typical hunting license.
When you buy your license, it's going to ask you, what county you're hunting, and it's going to, you're going to get a statewide buck tag.
Okay.
And then it's based on whichever county you're in, they're going to have a number of doe tags that they allot you.
Wow. Okay.
Then you're going to have to specify whether you're hunting public or private, and the tags are the doe tag. The buck tag will be good anywhere.
Yeah.
The doe tags are only good on where you specify you want to use them. What county and what kind of land.
Gotcha.
The good part is, first time hunters in Wisconsin get a reduced tag, a reduced license. I don't remember what it is. I know it was $85 or $80, but I think they raised it slightly.
Hey, that's so fine. It's
really, really cheap for the first time you go.
Yeah.
And then even a second time, it's only like 150 or something like that.
Dude, that's crazy. That's good actually. Cause I think when I looked at it, I've got it pulled up on my phone. I might be able to pull it up and see what it says if my phone wants to work. Let's see. Non-resident hunting deer. Let's see. I'll take my bow. Archer says $200.
Okay, but it's reduced now.
So, yeah.
And it might be like it's half price. I think that the 80 was a half price from 160, so maybe now it's 100.
Yeah. I mean, either way, $200 to go out of state.
I think it's something like half price the first time you buy it.
Okay.
So you'll have to figure out what a half price tag is.
Yeah. And that's no problem.
It'll ask you if it's your first time or something, and it'll know.
Yeah. I mean, $200 to go out of state's not bad. Like,
right.
I'm going to Colorado next year, and it's like 800. So I'll take the 200 over that any day. But, all right. So I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk to you about mobile hunting. So I'm getting into that a lot more this year. What would you say is your best tactic for that? Like from beginning to end, where do you start with that?
I don't know what to tell you. There's so much involved in it that most people wouldn't realize that, you know, like for me, a lot of my success comes from scouting at this time of the year.
Okay.
Really figuring them out right now and looking at their beds when they're not even home right now. They're off, moved off to some food source. I'm in there looking where they were bedded when, you know, the snow melts. So, I also go in the fall in new areas, just like you would, or like when you go up to Washburn, you're probably not going to have, you know, all spring scouting there because you're going from out of state. Well, I travel around like that too. And I hunt like that too. And I go in there and I try to figure out where they're bedding, right? I'll look at a map. I'll look at an aerial of the area. I'll look for, like in that area, I would look for all the transitions, the edges. I'd look for spots where it forms natural points and stuff that would give a deer the ability to set up a trap, like you'd have to go down a point to get to them or whatever. You know, put points of trees or mature trees entering immature trees, especially where like swamp meets woods, and that area has a lot of wetlands and stuff, creeks, stuff like that. The mature bucks up there really like to be isolated by water. So if you find a thick area that has water, like dogwood or something that's growing in water, or cattails or something like that, a lot of times those bucks will be bedded inside of that stuff, you know. And I'll look at the outside edges of that, and I'll just keep moving. I don't hunt the same spot over and over again. So if I go in there and I don't see him, you know, I'm trying to get to a range from his, what I assume is his bedding area. And if I don't see him, I assume he's not there. And I move to the next spot and move to the next spot and keep moving like that until I either kill him or run out of land is basically how I do it. And that's been pretty good for me. Now, just when you look at my stats, like I broke it down one time based on my kills. I've got, I want to say, like 50 head mounts now. I don't know exact number. And I would say probably about, 20 of them are what I'd call mature bucks, 5 or older, you know, or actual mature bucks. And when you break it down with those bucks, it's a huge difference between like the really good 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge difference. Like the 2 and 3-year-olds tend to come from the rut time frame. They tend to come from funnel stands, or they come from a stand that I hunt there, you know, every year once or twice because it's in a good mm-hmm. bedding location or whatever. But when I get those mature bucks, the actual mature ones, like 6 out of 7 maybe are the very first time I've ever sat there, which is completely different from the immature bucks.
Yeah. Right?
So it's just like when they get to a certain age, they're so good at reading, you know, where people have been. You know, when you go into a place, you leave an impact with your scent. And that impact is much more severe where that deer trusts. You know, like he'll walk across a human trail where people walk all the time. He'll walk up to a food source, you know, all the time. So a guy might put a trail camera at a food source and he's getting daylight pictures and he's like, oh, these deer ain't even scared of me, you know? But if he moves back to get a mature buck, when that mature buck hits his scent near his bedding area, that'll freak him out. You know, I look at it kind of like, if you walked out in your yard and you saw a bear track in your yard, you'd probably freak out a little bit, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But
especially where I'm at.
Well, you forget about it after a while.
Yeah.
If you walked in your house the next day and the window was busted open and that track was now on your kitchen table, now you'd freak out totally, right?
Yep.
When you get that scent near a bedding area, that's the bear track on the kitchen table. So
interesting.
So what I do is really aggressive, but it's one time. I go in there, pick the cherry and get out. And if I don't kill him, I move on to the next spot. That's what my mobile is. And I think most people have a tendency to kind of hunt their way in. And mm-hmm. I think when you do that with a mature buck, it's like slapping him on the ass and say, hey, I'm coming for you. I think the first time that deer smells me or knows I'm on the property, I want an arrow flying through his chest cavity.
Dude, I got to clip it. That was so sick to say. Really was. What's funny is like, so I've had Tim Knight on the podcast a couple of times. I don't know if you know Tim or not, but he's told me that same thing down here. Like he's killed a lot. I think he's got like 14, 15 Pope and Youngs in Georgia. And he said that same thing. He's like, man, you got all these guys. They're out here. They're scouting and then they hang a stand and they're leaving their scent. And then they go in there and they wonder why they can't see any deer. He's like, go in there, find the sign and hunt over it. And I'm like, you're right, Tim. And I was like, it makes perfect sense. So the one thing I am curious about, because I did a lot of that this year, especially when I hunted public, I'd have a general area in mind, especially the side that I know very well that I've been hunting for a few years now. Don't need any type of GPS or anything. I'd kind of learned where everything's at. But my issue is when I walked in, I'll see a rub and maybe I'll see a few rubs, right? Or I know there's a food source, but it's late October, it's early November, whatever. So I'm not really thinking of food source, I'm more thinking of rut activity. I also know of a spot that's a transition zone. So you've got really thick pines, there's a fire break, then it's open, like mixture of pines and oaks. Behind me, there's another fire break into cut pines. And then to my left, there's a swamp. So really you have all the different types of terrain in one, and I don't want to say terrain, but you know what I'm saying. You've got different types of areas in one spot.
The transitions meeting. Yeah,
exactly. And so I caught myself seeing some sign and being like, okay, I'm gonna go a little further. And I keep going 50 yards, find more sign. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, you know, they're obviously in here. I'm gonna keep going. And then I found one spot set up on this ridge to the area I was just telling you about. And granted, it was 70 something degrees that day and it shouldn't have been, right? So it was very warm. But do you think it's possible to maybe go past the sign that you need to see? Like, how do you avoid doing that?
Yeah, because I don't look at sign. I look at it, but I don't look at it like people. And what I mean by that is 95% of the sign is laid down at night. Sure. So these mature bucks are getting out of their bed. Like the ones I'm killing in bedding areas, when I pin it down, I know where the bedding area is. That deer gets out of the bed where I'm expecting him. moves to me 75 yards and I kill him, it's usually closing time when I kill him. How much further are they getting?
True.
You know, sometimes they get further. Sometimes it's, you know, half an hour. But the majority of them, it's right around that last 15 minutes of daylight, you know, when I'm shooting them. 15, 20 minutes of daylight. They're not getting much further. So you got to push that envelope. So for me, big sign in the woods just tells me there's a big deer there. Now I'm getting like, okay, I need to hunt this area down. But then I'm really studying the maps. I'm really scouting the property. I'm really looking hard at exactly where would these bucks be bedded. And that's
okay. So I want to focus on bedding, because that is one thing I've struggled the most with, is being able to go in and be like, oh, there's a deer bedded there. Because in my mind, you know, I'm thinking like, if you go where there's a field or corn or whatever, you can kind of see it pushed down. Like you can see where something was bedded there. But if you're in the big woods or you're in swamps, what do you look for? Like if you're looking at a map and you're saying, all right, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to scout, where do you typically find that these deer are bedded at?
It's really going to be relative to the terrain. What are we talking about? You talking about up north, or are you talking about down by you, or?
I guess really just in general. Let's talk up north, because I feel like I could take what you've seen up there and try to at least use that a little bit here and sort of adapt it to what we have here.
Okay, so if you went up to Washburn County, that's and you're saying you're in the big woods area, I'm going to look at that woods, and I could care less about anything that's a chunk of woods.
Okay.
You don't live in the woods. They live in the edge. So I'm going to look at where the edges are. And then I'm going to look at how that terrain's shaped. And I'm going to look at I'm going to look for high and low elevations along that area. I mean, if it's really steep, I'm going to look at the like top third of the leeward sides of hills. You know, if it's hilly area, if it's not hilly and it's lower in swamp areas, which I think you'd find more up there, and you'd find that to be better. Even if you found hilly stuff, I think you'd be better off down by the swamps. They're going to isolate them, especially around wolves. They're going to isolate themselves into those swamps. And the more the pressure, the more that's true. And they'll look for like islands that are within the wetter areas. Like you know, when you get down in the low, like flat, almost water level land, if there's an island in there, it'll change the vegetation. You'll have some bigger trees. You can kind of see that. See it on a map. You can see it with your eyes if you're up high. Those spots will have bedding off the tips of them. They'll like the tapering points coming off the bedding along the edges, like where that swamp meets the hardwoods. That'll usually be there to be some sort of change in that line, that transition line, whether it's a point coming in or whatever. And if you're looking at a map, you'll start to see like if the swamp's kind of grassy, you'll see an area of thicker brush. Those will usually be the bedding areas. Then you look at how they come out of that into the hardwoods. Really, you get an eye for it after a while. You can kind of look at a map, know where they're going to be, and that's where they're going to come out of. To answer your question?
So, yes. How do you determine, and I think I know the answer to this, but just in case I'm wrong, how do you determine the direction these deer are moving? Are you going in there and you're just expecting to bump them and see where they run and then kind of go from that? Or are you looking at maybe their tracks, or you can see the trails and you can assume like, okay, this, I know he's bedded in here. He's got three trails going off in different directions. Yes. Obviously he's going to go in, out, in, out.
It's the trails coming out of the bedding area and the sign coming out of the bedding area. Generally when they go into bedding, they go in a little different than they come out. They like to circle downwind, smell it, check it out before they go in. So it gets a little harder in the mornings. But in the evenings, they just seem to get up, go from point A to point B, and those beat trails coming out of where they're leaving. Generally, like if it's a point going out into a swamp, say there's a point of hardwood trees that taper off into swampy trees, right? He's going to bend towards the tip of that and let you go down that tip towards him and he's going to monitor that point, right? For you or for wolves or whatever. Right? And, generally, he's going to get up off of that and go into that woods, like go up towards oaks, go up towards fields, go up to whatever, but enter that woods. There are some that go the other way for whatever reason. Sometimes they eat stuff in the swamp or they do things in the swamp. But for the most part, they generally go that way. So a lot of times when I'm on land I haven't been on, I'll go hit those points, those bedding points, bedding features or whatever, and kind of creep in and look for the sign coming out, and then set up as close as I dare, guessing where those beds are, which would be right at the tip.
Gotcha. Dude, it's amazing how smart these deer can be. It really is. Like, I hear guys like you explain this stuff, and I'm like, people look at them like they're just goats, but I mean, I do give them a lot more credit. Like, they're so good at surviving. It's crazy, especially the older bucks. And that is something I learned this year, is I had a 7-year-old buck, first time I've ever hunted a deer like that. And I've hunted this spot for 2 years now, never daylighted, not once. Even when my buddy was hunting over there himself and I wasn't, he still never daylighted. And I have a video that you can see this deer hear the trail camera, which at the time I didn't know there was stuff going on with it, but it was making a very, very small amount of noise, right? And I went there and tested it, and I couldn't hear it. I'm like, there's no way. And then the next day I got a video of him, and he comes in middle of the night, right? And immediately clocks that camera, and I can see his ear shift to it. And he just straight jumps and then runs off, and I don't see him for a month. And then I took that camera out. A lot of other things happened, you know, because like I was saying, acorns, heat, whatever. Also, the neighbor was building a box blind in the middle of deer season. So, you know, that.
Awesome.
Yeah, that definitely helped. I finally got this deer to daylight after season. But the thing that was crazy is like how smart he was, because he would follow. And I've got a couple of cameras over there, and he would follow the trail that I would use to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would follow the trail I'd use to get out. And I never picked up on it till this year. And I'm like, dude. No wonder. I was like, you're going to make this tough on me, because I only have really one point of access. I can change it a little bit, but if I wanted to really throw this deer for a loop, I'd have to, in a sense, go on county property and walk in, because where I'm at, so this actual spot down here, it's like this little finger of woods that's between two big open patches, and there's a thicket to my left, really thick stuff to the right. So I'm in a spot where it's open and they use it to travel through. In front of me, there is, I call it a marsh. It's really a field, but when it rains, it turns into like a big wide open marshy swamp kind of thing. And I know these deer go through it because I've literally watched them do it. And it's just nuts to me how, I guess, intentional their movements seem to be, at least the older deer. So, I mean, is that... That's got to be something you've seen, like hunting the bigger, older deer that you have. Is it one of those deals where, or I guess, you know what, let me ask you this. Have you ever had a deer that's really thrown you for a loop and you had to go outside of the box to kill him?
Well, usually.
Okay, well, there you go.
So, mature bucks, I mean, usually finding the bed isn't that hard. It's the figuring out how to kill them thing, because usually they've got a setup to bust you. You know what I mean? There's like an aha moment when you figure out where they're bedding, like, wow, this is a smart spot, you know?
Yeah.
But the bigger the bucks, the more they kind of lock in areas. Or like if you jump a good 3-year-old or something, he might relocate a whole new area. But when they start getting like 5, 6, 7, like the deer you're just describing, they seem to lock into areas because they like get smarter over time. They start, you know, like I can go out in the marsh behind my house. I can show you 100 different bedding areas that are torn up with rubs. There's probably about 10 of those that mature bucks will bed in. It's all 2-year-olds ripping up all those bedding areas. And I call those like nurseries. You know, the mature bucks pick certain areas that they like, I don't know how to say this, but like when I shoot like a 6, 7-year-old deer, every time they're full of, you know, projectiles. They got wounds all over them. They got a crooked leg, you know,
yeah,
lead ball out of their shoulder. Just about every time. And those deer are learning some hard life lessons. You know what I mean? And they get real paranoid about where they bed. So like when you look at how does bed, they'll go to the same area over and over and over again.
Oh yeah.
Buck will go and he'll bed like, just like people kind of, they're like the guy. He just worries about himself. He's not worried about the group. Does bed in that circle. They alarm each other. They're worried about each other. The buck goes out there and he worries about himself. So he puts his back up against an obstacle. He looks downwind. You know, he hides himself in a spot. They'll actually bed to watch an access where you enter the woods. They do that quite often.
Yeah. I've had that happen.
Yeah. So, they're this paranoid thing, you know, this paranoid entity, and you got to look at them like that. Like for me, if I take that whole public land or the whole property you're going to, whether it's maybe even if it's private, if it's being hunted, I look at it as an, okay, what isn't anybody hunting? And I scratch off 90% of the map of where I think just that's where people would go. That's where they expect deer. That's where you're going to go. Some guys will go to the middle. Some people go over here. Some people like this ridge because it's right here. But nobody's going like in the parking lot and going 100 yards down from the parking lot along the road. And that's got some good terrain there. I'm going to check that out. So I find the spots where people don't go. Because when you go in the woods and you hunt a spot, your scent is probably there for 15 or 30 days, depending on the weather. So anytime that deer comes through, he sees with his nose. We see with our eyes. So it's hard for us to comprehend that. But he's getting this image that this is where people go. This is where somebody's out to kill me. You know what I mean? Somebody came in here. They're okay with that on trails that you access because they get to learn this is an access trail. You know, that's where people move. But when all of a sudden that scent starts coming into an area where they live in daylight, they're going to freak a little bit. You know what I mean? The bear track on the table. So that's that whole mobile thing, you know, shifting in and, you know, moving to where they are and just hunting it down. And then even if I get into an area and I don't kill him, or maybe he's not home, when he comes home, like, because they'll not bed in a spot for 2 days and come the third day he does, you know, when he comes home, my sense just outside the back door, he's like, oh crap, this ain't good. So he moves, right? So I literally take these big swamps, and if they only got 10 spots to hunt in, by the time I'm hunted 5 spots without seeing him, I'm like, all right, this is getting good. There's only 5 more spots he could be. You know, it's instead of the, oh man, I'm not seeing nothing kind of thing, you know?
So just to circle back to the bedding area stuff, if I'm scouting around, what I want to look for is basically a spot that, because I try to think like you were just saying, like a buck that wants to be in a secure location. So look for something that would maybe provide that. Mm-hmm. Also look for sign and trails. Is there anything on the ground that I could say it's a leaf?
If you went out at this time of the year, you'll be able to see the beds in some of the good spots.
Okay.
There's some spots based on vegetation, especially down where you're at, where you might not be able to quite see it. But there's some spots you will.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what made me good at this is going out every spring for the last 50 years looking at this stuff.
Really?
I look at those beds every year. Every time I go in there into a property and look at them, and I'm always looking at new properties. I do it, you know, 3-4 times a week. I go scout properties this time of the year, every year.
Yeah.
And I go look at those beds over and over and over again, where they live, how they come out, where could I set up? I do this over and over and over again. And then when I don't do it and I walk into a property, say I go to a different state or we have a challenge or something, or I hear about some buck on a property I've never been on.
Yeah.
I look at that property and almost subconsciously I go, they're going to be right there. That's where they're going to come out.
That's crazy. You got the sixth sense. That's so cool, man.
You know, the hardest part about it is that some of the really biggest deer I've shot, the biggest and oldest ones, have come, they've bed in a spot with no sign. There's no rub lines coming out of it or anything. The very biggest buck I ever shot, that buck, I watched him bed in the same spot for 2 years straight. It was an open area. It was an open pasture that had no cattle in it for like 10 years. And it had grown in with thick grass, but you couldn't get near this thing. But I could see it from a distance when I would hunt. I'd watch it get up, come out, move around, and just trying to figure out a way where, is it going to get far enough in daylight? Because there's no trees or nothing. It's just grass, you know? I ended up killing that thing by crawling on my hands and knees up to its bed and jumping up with a shotgun and shooting it in its bed. But I even picked up, the year before I shot him, I picked up one of his sheds in that bed. He bedded there so often. He'd bedded there like almost every time it was a west wind. And my point was that in a 100-yard radius around that bed, there wasn't a scraper or rub.
So you'd never know if you were just looking for sign.
And what I've seen and what I get out of this, now I can't think like a deer, but I can, you know, kind of try and figure out what I see.
Yeah.
And on like the public land and the areas that I do a lot of my hunting, they're heavily pressured and there isn't a mature buck on every property. So I have to go find a mature buck to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So those bucks have no competition. And when they're rubbing in bedding areas, it's usually competing for other bucks that are same age class. So that's why 2-year-olds rip up bedding areas like crazy on public land. But now the reason I assess that is because when I've been on private land that's well managed and has multiple mature bucks, those mature buck bedding areas are ripped up. All the beds are rubbed up and stuff, right? So it's really relative to what that deer relates as competition and then at what time of the year he's bedding there. So if they're bedding there in pre-rut, I don't care if he's the only buck around, he's going to do some rubbing. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But outside of that pre-rut thing, you know, then there might not be rubs in those beds or a lot of sign. But that buck that I was just talking about, he bedded there in rut and there was still no rubs or scrapes or anything near that spot.
Yeah, he sounds like he was just in a perfect spot. He didn't need to show people like, hey, this is where I'm sleeping at, guys. You know, but it's funny.
Not only that, but if you think about it, if he left big rub lines coming out of there with the hunting pressure we have up here, he'd die.
That's true.
He wouldn't grow that old. So maybe it's like genetically the ones that don't do that
are the ones that get big and old.
And then they breed, Nate, you know.
Dude, I never thought of it that way. It's crazy to think though, like, especially, see, this is why I like doing this whole, like, this part of the podcast is talking about this stuff. Cause I mean, this past season, man, one of my spots I actually had one of the bigger bucks show up this morning. He's still got his rack on him. And I'm like, dude, it's freaking end of February. What are you doing? That's not normal around here. But during the, I'd say early October to early December, this was the year that I saw the most sign. And I have got it on video. I've got a million photos of them laying down scrapes, rubs, fighting, all of that. I've never seen that on this property before. And when you were explaining, like, you've got bucks that will tear stuff up and they're, you know, when you see a lot of that, it's not just normally one deer. There's probably a few that are all the same age class. All of these deer, except for one, were 3.5, 4.5 years old. There was 1 5.5 year old that super smart deer, but they were all roughly the same size. And, you know, it makes perfect sense because I had 5 scrapes. So I'll kind of give you a little explanation of like what I'm talking about is within 7 acres that backs up to hundreds, I mean, hundreds of big woods. And I've got this one little clearing. So only one that is within, I don't know, 1/4 mile. And I've looked on the map just to verify that, but it's this one little clearing. And for years, I'd have maybe a scrape, maybe 2 scrapes, right? This year, I had 5 scrapes in a U shape that you've got 2 access points. So like you got the woods here and there's 2 trails that come up to the opening. And at both edges of the trails, there was a scrape. There was another tree about 10 yards down. There's a scrape right in front of my stand. There was a scrape right next to my stand. There was a scrape. And then the other access trail, another scrape. I killed the buck that I shot last year while he was hitting a scrape. And that was the first time I've ever done that. Now, mind you, it was a spike. It's a little guy back of wherever, how I can't move my hand correctly. That one. But, you know, that's just 3 years not killing a buck. And I'm like, Lord, I'm going to take whatever you sent me. Right. It was one of those years. But I say all of that to point out, like, you're absolutely right that there was a group of bucks that decided to come over this year and they were roughly around the same age. And you could see all the signs. And then I found 3 scrapes on a ridge that's about 40, no, no, not 40, probably like 80 yards away on the back end of the property that they were still scraping and putting down sign in December. And I'm talking like car hood size, like they had just hit it the day before. So you're dropping so much knowledge right now. I'm going to have to re-listen to this and be like, okay, so what did I miss? There's so much to it. But one thing I want to ask you about public land, because I know you do hunt a lot of public land. I heard this thing one time, or an argument somebody was making, where they said there's 2 different ways you can look at public land. Either you go in a mile where you think no one's going to be, and that's typically what I hear on other podcasts, and like people say, oh, you got to go deep where the deer are at. Or you could, like how you said, there's a spot 100 yards from the parking lot that I personally have seen more deer that way. Like I saw 160 inch 10 point 5 years ago. I was 150 yards from where I parked. I could see my truck. So what's your experience with that? Like, I know it's kind of subjective. Deer obviously going to be different, but in a general sense, do you see more, I guess, do you see more deer or big bucks closer to parking, or do you see them deeper in?
Ever since Onyx, closer to parking.
Yeah.
Okay. Before Onyx, I saw them both places, you know, but before Onyx, remember, I'm an old guy. The deer would be, the hunters would, you'd rarely see one in the middle, you know, when it was a very large woods.
Yeah.
And if you did, they left an hour before dark or half an hour before dark. You see the parking lots clear out before closing time. It would just boggle my mind. But, Onyx is really giving people the bravery to go deep. And cell cams have really changed things too, because people throw them all over the place. But they also tip off their hands. You know, I'm not hunting in a spot with a cell cam, because if there's a cell cam there, that guy knows if that deer's there. Yep. And if a big one is showing up in daylight, he's hunting it. He's going to be there. So why would I even want to throw a hunt at that? Because that guy's constantly going in there and educating that deer. So that's a good thing to know where he's hunting. And then you just move around him. But I find little pockets all over the place. But the one thing is, it's where people don't go. It can be deep, but a lot of people do go deep. It can be deep. It could be across the river. It can be something that's overlooked. A lot of the spots where I kill bucks nowadays are like really thick, low brush areas where you couldn't hunt on the ground because the brush is too thick. You can't hunt out of a tree because there is no such thing. And I find a way to kill them, you know, because they're living in some place where nobody hunts them because of the terrain. So they're moving in there in daylight. I just have to figure out a way to get in the tree, whether I have to take my strap on my tree stand and pull three trees together to make a tree big enough to me hold my stand off the ground, or whatever I have to do.
Wait. What?
Yeah.
You've done that?
Yeah, these small bushy trees, and take them, strap them together and put a stand on them so it doesn't shake, you know, when you're standing up. But all you have to do is, a lot of these deer I'm shooting, I'm only getting 6 or 8 feet off the ground. You got to be able to shoot over the brush and not be right at eye level with them in the tangles, you know?
And
I'm finding ways to hunt that stuff. So literally, my job is to find the deer and right where he's living, and then figure out a way to hunt them, whether it's on the ground, whether it's finding some way to be elevated, whatever, and do it without dropping any scent there before I hunt. You know, so it's not an easy task, but it's something I've been mastering.
Yeah. So what is your idea on, like, scent control? Because I used to be a major freak with it, like, really bad. And now I've kind of gotten to the point where, I mean, I might use something just to make myself feel better, but I really stopped caring as much. I mean, I used to, I'll tell you how bad it was. I have a tote that I use this thing called camo dust that I would dust down all my clothes, seal it, and I'd never wear any of it. I'd wash it again, do the same thing. And then all year long, I'd be using that green, what is it? Hunter's, forget what it's called, but something you buy at Walmart, right? It's that, you know, scent killing stuff that you shower with. I'd only wash my clothes in scent killing pods and just all the crazy stuff. And I was still getting blown at. So I finally, I literally one day this season got blown at and was like, dude, I did all of this stuff. Why am I'm still getting caught. It's the wind. And I knew that, but I also knew that it was a little bit shifty that day. So like, what's your opinion on that? Do you care a lot about scent control, or do you just play the wind and not really worry about it?
So, I don't believe in scent control at all. I don't think there's one thing you could possibly do, to fool a deer's nose. And there's lots of reasons I believe that. It's kind of like politics when they tell you to trust the science. The people telling you the science in scent control are people working for scent control companies. Yep. Whenever you talk to somebody outside of those scent control companies that knows anything about science, they tell you it's hogwash. And really, how a deer smells is so much different than how we smell, that it's hard for humans to comprehend. But there's been tests, there's been things that have done that are just amazing. But just some things I've observed, like there was a study done on bears. Bears smell real similar to deer.
Yeah.
They're coming out of their dens. See, I'm a big bear hunter too, so that's why I keep track of that stuff. But they were coming out of their dens in the North Woods, and they're hungry. So they're collared. So the scientists are watching where they're going, right? Mm-hmm. And they're seeing a trend where these deer will just wander, or these bears will just wander. And all of a sudden, they'll stop and turn 90 degrees and go directly into the wind. And they're watching these bears go as far as 10 miles straight to a food source into the wind that they smell. Quite often, it's like winter-killed deer or something. Yeah. But they're going to a food source directly into the wind up to 10 miles that they're smelling. So, where you wouldn't smell it from 100 yards, you know what I'm saying? Another one, like with dogs, I'm big into detective shows. Not like makeup ones, but where you actually...
Yeah, like legit ones.
Yeah, exactly. I watched this one where this guy, he was a serial killer and they're looking for him. And they got a tip that he was in this motel in Texas.
Yeah.
So the FBI and stuff go down there and they raid this place and they kick in the door. They go in there and there's nobody in there. Place is empty. So they went in and out of this room like 100 times. They go and get the manager of the hotel. They got to get him from home or whatever. He gets down there and they're like, tell us about this guy. He left like 3 days ago. And, he hasn't been back. He ran out of money. We kicked him out. Yeah. What was he driving? He didn't have a car. He was on foot. He took all this stuff and just took off. And they're like, okay. So they go through the room and the room's been cleaned, completely cleaned down for next guest, right?
Yeah.
But nobody had stayed there yet. And they look under the desk and in the garbage can, there's one single item. It's a soda can, a Coke can laying in there empty. They call the maid in and they ask her if that's hers, how that got in there. And she says, well, that's from the guy that was in here. It's a crappy motel, as you could imagine, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, if it's one item like that, I'm not going to throw the garbage out for one item. She says, I just left it in there. And they're like, okay. So they take this can out they put a glove on, they take the can out and they bring in a canine and they have this dog smell this can. And they take him outside, and there's hundreds of people walking up and down the sidewalks and stuff. This is 3 days earlier, right? The dog starts smelling the pavement, follows that guy's scent up the sidewalk, across the road, across a lawn, down to a creek, and then kind of loses it at this creek. Goes up and down the creek, both sides. All of a sudden, on the other side, he picks it back up, runs up the hill to a tent this guy's sleeping in on the hillside. And they bust this guy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You're going to beat that nose. I mean, literally, there's nothing you can do. I mean, a long time ago, I was contacting Mythbusters and trying to get them to do something with scent control.
Yeah.
And they did. I don't know if it was from me or not because they never answered me directly, but I sent them messages and they did.
Yeah.
So I was very intrigued on what they did and I was watching it intently. But it got taken right down because they got threatened to get sued. So what happened was, you can still find remnants of it, though. If you Google it, you'll find pieces of it.
Yeah.
You won't find the whole show because they took it down. But what they did was they went to, I got to be careful here not to name the company or I'll get sued. But they went to a clothing manufacturer that makes carbon clothing.
Oh, yeah.
They asked them, what do we have to do to use this product? What do we need? So they're like, you need this, you need this, you need that, blah, blah, blah. So they sell them the whole gauntlet. So they take three guys. You've ever watched Mythbusters?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So they take three guys and they got one where they have them work out and get sweaty and not change. And they have them act nasty. Then they have one guy who they have shower and wear clean clothes.
Yeah.
Then they have one guy that they do the whole thing. They scrub this guy down that... rubber boots, the whole thing with the everything that was suggested by the scent control company, right? They have them wear everything. So then the first test they did was They had them walk the same length of distance and the same terrain, the same type of elevation. They tried to simulate it as much as they could, the same for each one of them.
Yeah.
And they put the dog on it and they had them stand at the end of the trail and saw how long it took the dog to find them. And what's funny is in each test, the dog found the person wearing the carbon suit first. And then they did another test where they had a box on a hill and they had the guy sit in it. And they gave the dog the guy's scent, and then they walked the dog downwind at like 100 yards until he hit the scent when the wind hit him. And they timed how long from there it took him to run to the box and catch the person and caught the scent control guy first. Almost like he had a cleaner order where it was easier for the dog to run.
Right. Yeah.
Like the dog looked up, ran right to him, right? And they released those findings. And the scent control company threatened to sue him. So they went to him and they said, listen, we went to you and we asked you, here's our messages, what to use. And you said to use this stuff because they were saying they used it wrong. Basically,
yeah,
used the product wrong. And they're like, well, we didn't know you were doing the show. If we knew you were doing a show, we would have told you a little different. Here's what you got to do. And they said this on the show because they did a follow-up.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, they said we have to tape the seams. So to tape the seams on the gloves, they had to breathe through a mask that had a respirator on it. So it was going through a filter. They had to tape everything. Their eyes couldn't show. They couldn't show any skin. They taped everything. They taped the boots. They taped the seam where the belt is, right?
Yeah.
Everything. And then they completely scrubbed these guys down and power washed them before they had them go out, right? Absolutely same results. The exact same results. Not one difference. And it was funny that the dog found the scent control person first, but it was literally a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
It was seconds. So it really was.
It didn't matter.
Right. Exactly. But, when they got done with the results and they put it out there, the scent control company started a lawsuit. And then they just agreed to pull the show down if they dropped the lawsuit. But you can still find remnants of it if you Google it.
Is this scent control company still in business?
Yeah, it's one of the big ones.
Ah, yeah. I figured that. See, that's what's wild, man. It's like I hear some guys, I'm not going to name anybody, but I hear them be like, well, I don't worry about wind. I just throw on my suit and I'm good to go. And it's like, hey, if it works for you, great. You know, I've tried that method. I have hunted with the wind at my back and thinking that I'm, you know, invisible, and I didn't see anything. I didn't see squirrels. Like, it was that bad. So
well, I'd like to read something for you once quick, if I can find it. I was just looking at it today. Hold on a second.
You're good.
A second here. I actually did a journal a few years back, and I logged all my interactions with deer, and I broke it down into what happened scent wise, and it's pretty cool.
This is gonna be good.
You're gonna like this. I'm half ass blind. I'm too cheap to get glasses. These are ones I found in the lost the phone box.
Nice. I know the feeling, man. I've been wearing contacts since I was 12 years old, and I take them off and I can't see nothing. It's terrible.
I thought it was right here. Sorry.
No, you're good.
I had it was something like I saw in a season of 66 hunts or 68 hunts or something like that. I saw something like 130 total deer. And I think of that 130 that I did not shoot, approximately half of them either crossed my scent trail or got directly downwind of me.
Yeah.
And it was something like 12 of them reacted harshly.
Oh, wow.
Or actually reacted at all, you know, from downwind. And of the ones that crossed my scent trail, it was like 5 or 6 reacted from the scent trail, you know. But I had a journal that just logged everything I saw. So I just went through the journal and went back and did the math. And it was funny because there was a whole bunch. I did that because I wasn't the only one doing journals, and a whole bunch of scent control people were doing journals. And we compared notes, and it was almost identical. The number of deer that smelled me downwind was almost identical to these guys that carry the bend, the tote, the sprays. Yeah. There was like no difference. And they were like, there's no way you only get busted that much. And I'm like, there's no way you get busted so much. You know,
it's yeah, like, right.
You know,
I thought this stuff was supposed to cover everything.
And even if it did make a difference, the way I hunt, you couldn't use it. I mean, I'm going through swamp and stuff. You just wash the stuff off. You clog the suits. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just,
well, like I've always wondered, you know, cause I mean, especially when I first started hunting, dude, it's crazy. I look back at it and I used to think that I'd want the wind at my back. Cause I you know, I didn't know, right? Like growing up, all I knew about hunting was my uncle who went up to Wisconsin every year and killed some pretty decent deer, but he didn't teach me anything. So I'm playing deer hunter, you know, like those CD games that we used to have back in the '90s, I'd be playing deer hunter 2 and big game hunter and stuff on the computer. And so I knew nothing about it. So once I got into it, I'm thinking, okay, I have this bottle of doe and estrus and I need the wind to be at my back because I'm going to spray it and it's going to go miles and it's going to bring all these deer in, right? Didn't happen. The one thing that did happen was I remember this like it was yesterday because it was so impactful, but I had the wind in my face and you want to talk about not knowing anything. I had this, I think it was Wish or Timu or something like 1980s Vietnam, like camo leafy thing cover, I guess you could call it. And so I took two nails, nailed it on two different trees, spread it out, and I had a lawn chair that I was sitting in with my rifle because I wasn't bow hunting at the time. And I'm sitting there with the wind in my face, and I'm like, all right, it's kind of windy. I'm good. I'm all covered. They're only going to see my head. They're not going to know. I'm going to spray some of this doe and estrus. It was like 20 mile an hour wind in my face. And I go, next thing I know, it comes back and hits me fully in the face. And I'm just like, I have to go to my mother-in-law's place after this. My wife is going to kill me. And that goes to show, like, then to now and hearing the stuff you're saying, if I knew what you were saying now and what I know now back then, I probably could have, you know, been saved from it a little bit. But it was the same stuff. I used to do the spray and pray stuff all the time. I'd get the bottle of, you know, that orange bottle at Walmart and then sweat going up the tree. And I'd be like, all right, I'm good. And then get blown at, you know, 20 yards behind me or in front of me or whatever it was. And so over the years, like, I just have gotten to the point that even the best stuff, it doesn't work. At least not the way that they claim. It might help a little bit, but you can't beat a deer's nose.
My rude awakening to it was, you know, back in the early 90s, I was a pretty young guy. I started really killing big bucks and drawing a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. And I started doing shows and working for product manufacturers and stuff. And I'd be hanging around with some people who I really looked up to. I mean, these guys had TV shows and stuff, and they'd air some of my stuff on their shows and stuff. And we were sitting around before a show, and these guys are really well known. You know, if I told you names, you'd know everybody that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And they're like, Dan, you got to stop telling people scent control don't work. I'm like, it don't. And they're like, yeah, it don't. But if you ever want to make a living at this, you have to have that. You don't just, like, hunting doesn't make much money. So you have to have a scent control manufacturer. You have to have a spray manufacturer. You have to have a camo manufacturer. You have to have a bow. If you're not doing those things, you're not making enough money. And you're just, like, taking half your paycheck and throw it out the window. You just spray some crap on your boots and you get paid. You don't do that. And they were like bitter with me because they got a show and it's funded by scent control. And I'm saying that stuff off of the show. Like you're going to draw attention from our product manufacturer. And they're like, we don't believe in it either. They're like, it's stupid. But you spray it on, you get paid. You don't, you don't. And that's the way most of those people in the industry look at that. You know, and a lot of people going into this, probably yourself, you watch those shows. That's how you got started. You're watching like, how do I hunt? And it's like a brainwash. You're over and over again. Well, first, we got to spray down. So, you know, I always mocked it. And I'd piss a lot of people off. I'd get a lot of hate mail. But I have fun doing it. I'd like,
yeah,
on that very first public land challenge, I knew there was going to be just a crap ton of people watching that show. So when we got to the truck, when we're getting ready to go out, I go, well, the first thing we got to do is spray down. And I pull up some deep woods off. And I'm like... I got so much hate.
Oh, man.
So much hate, man.
Hey, it works just as good. They might just think you're out there camping. I mean, I will say, dude, like, and I don't want to say anything negative about the industry or anything like that. It's got its good and bad. But I did learn that, you know, because I've been doing this now 4 years. And I learned that the first year that, because I went into it, you know, I did this mainly because I just wanted to and get to know people in the industry and you know, have friends in it and maybe do something with it. But I thought that it was going to be like everybody's rooting for each other, that it's all true. Nobody would lie. Everyone's a God-fearing man, yeah, right. Right? A year goes by and I'm like, wow, this is not what I thought it was. And that's not to say there's not great people in it. Like you're a great dude. You know, you shoot people straight. You're not out here feeding people crap. But I know people that do. I know a lot of guys that do. I know some people that 1 year they're saying, oh man, this broadhead's the best. Next thing you know, deal falls through and they're shooting something else. I'm like, oh, well, this one's even better. And it's like, dude, you're just saying that because they're paying you. You know, and I've been guilty of it. I've worked with one broadhead company, loved it at the time, had some issues with it, left it, worked with another one. And now I love that. And it's the one I was using before I went to the other company. So like, you get what I'm saying? Like it doesn't shock me at all. I probably know the guys that you're talking about. Honestly, and I get it. You know, I mean, if it's your livelihood and stuff, I understand you got to do that. But I personally couldn't live with myself if I'm telling somebody that something's going to help them in the woods, knowing they're going to use it, knowing they're going to rely on it, and I don't even believe in it. You know, so I give you credit for that. But look, man, before we sign off of here, I want you to give a shameless plug for everything you got going on. I know that you run Beast Stands. So tell everybody where they can find that and where they can find you. And dude, I do want to say thank you for coming on because it's hilarious. I have to tell the story real quick of how this happened because I messaged you. I think we've been friends on Facebook for a little while, but I messaged you last May. It was like, hey, Dan, run this podcast. I'd love to have you on. What do you think about like July, you know, cause June was booked out and you hit me up a month ago. You were like, yeah, man, hit me up when it gets a little closer. And I'm like, Dan, that was like 8 months ago, man.
Yeah, you know,
are you free?
I get so many freaking messages that I miss.
Oh yeah.
And then they pop up and I don't even realize I'm looking at an old one or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and a guy like you, like I honestly, you're one of those. So there's like a group of people that people will message and I know better, right? Like the big dogs and stuff. A lot of times you don't hear back, you know? And so when I hit you up, I'm like, all right, I'm going to try. But if I don't hear back, not a big deal. I get it, you know? And then you hit me back and I thought it was hilarious. I wanted so bad to be like, buddy, that specific ship has sailed, but if you are open to February, I'd love to get you on. So, I appreciate you taking the time. I really do. Like this is going to help a lot of people, myself included, but yeah, go ahead and give us a shameless plug and tell everybody where they can find you.
All right. Well, speaking of, shameless people in this industry that, screw people over, I no longer work in tree stands.
Oh, but really?
I'm locked out of the tree stand company. Yeah. So I'll probably go work with one of the other companies now. But if people want to find me,
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. It's just starting to get out now. But if people want to find me, the YouTube channel is probably the best. I do have a website that's kind of cool. It's a forum based. It's like a Facebook for hunters. It's not as big as it used to be, but before Facebook, it was just the biggest thing around. And that's Hunting Beast. If you just Google Hunting Beast, you'll find all that stuff. The YouTube is probably the most interesting for most people.
Yeah, those YouTube videos you put out are very helpful. I've watched them quite a few times.
Yeah, it's not really about like me out there saying, look what I shot, look what I shot. It's yeah. Educational. It's like yep. Helping people grow as hunters.
God, you're doing all the right things, man. You're doing it for the right reasons. I love it. Well, Dan, thank you for coming on, brother. It was a great episode. I would like to, if you're available, I know, you know, you're very busy and all that, but I would like to do another one, maybe summertime, go over some of the stuff you're seeing. Definitely talk about some more of the Wisconsin stuff, because like I said, I've been to Wisconsin. I've been to Sheboygan plenty of times. My brother lives up there, but I've never hunted it. And actually, you know, I want to ask you one other thing. Because this just, pardon my French, but this chaps my ass. What is the deal with these albino deer? Why can't we hunt them? Because my dad sent me a picture of one when he was up there, and it was a nice buck. It was beautiful white, and I'm like, it's not worth the jail time. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, it's really the tree huggers and stuff like to see them. You know, they like to look at them. We've actually, by my house, have a population of them. Where they're not really albino, but they're completely whites that are considered, you know, albino. But they're actually like white phase, like you see a white phase squirrel or whatever. So they actually have white fawns and stuff that are increasing. And because nobody's shooting them, those are starting to take off. So there's one area like around here where there's like 13% or 14% of them are white. And sometimes you go by a field and there'll be 7 white deer out at once. It is kind of cool to look at, but, and they would die out pretty quick. You know, when they had that, that time frame of, where they wanted to kill all the deer in southern Wisconsin, they opened up, albino deer. They did for 3 years. And in that 3 years, I shot an albino doe. I got it mounted. Yeah. I shot at and missed another one. And, I had a albino buck walking up to me. And it turned about 50 yards from me and walked over my buddy and he shot it. I got that mount because my buddy died. He left it to me.
That's awesome. But not that he died, but that you've got the mount.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of a cool memory. But they had opened it up permanently from then on, but only in the CWD area. But then somebody in western Wisconsin shot a famous giant albino buck. And the liberals went crazy. The tree huggers went crazy. And they did this thing where to get the governor who, because our DNR is run by the governor is the one who changed the law, to get him thrown out of office. So then he got scared and he changed it back to you can't shoot albinos.
Jeez, man. Well, hopefully within our lifetime, they'll open some type of season for that. Cause that's one, I told my wife, you know, she doesn't mind hunting, but she also doesn't want it upstairs. Like all my stuff's down here in the basement. And I told her one time, I'm like, listen, cause we have them here too. You know, we got piebalds, we got albinos. They're very, very rare, but they do exist here. And I was like, if I ever see one, I'm getting a full body mount. I'll take a loan out to get a full body mount. I don't care what you say. It's going in the living room by the fireplace. We're going to see it. And she was like, okay, if you shoot an albino, you can do that. I was like, all right, one day. I pray about it all the time. We'll see. But anyway, man, yeah, I'd like to see one up there. I mean, I do enjoy seeing deer, you know, like, yes, I like hunting them and stuff, but I like to just see them too. I mean, I almost hit a buck 2 days ago, driving to work. I mean, this little 2-year-old still at his rack, all that stuff. And it was cool to see. I don't see them much. So when you get to see them, it's, especially out of season, it's like, dude, all right, they're still around. You know, they're not just on the camera. They're actually real. So I don't know, man. But anyway, thank you for coming on. Thank you for all the info. I'm really looking forward to the next episode. And everybody go follow Dan on everything he said. If you want to learn some stuff, Dan's the man. That's the best way to put it. So appreciate it, brother.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Hey guys, I just want to say thank you for listening to this episode of Southeastern Bowhunter Podcast. If you don't mind, check us out on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube. Give us a like and review. Make sure to subscribe and all of that. And, you know, I have to give the thanks to our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. None of this would be possible without him. And, you know, I just want to remind you of that. So I'm looking forward to this next episode. I hope you guys are too. And thank you again.